Okay, good morning. Today's Daf Yomi is, sorry? Oh, you have to, go ahead. Tzadi Gimel, 93. Thank you. Okay, today's Daf Yomi is sponsored in the merit of Refuah Shleima for Michal Ben Froma, and our learning this morning should be as good for his Refuah Shleima. Okay, so we're picking up today's Daf is Daf Tzadi Gimel 93, and I believe we're picking up on the second line over here. So what we're dealing with the Gemara, we started really yesterday dealing with this issue of the Machlokes between Rav and Shmuel about whether Holchim B'mamon Achar HaRov. So we know that the concept is that in Isurim, in questions of what's permitted or not, a prototypical case would be the idea if you have 9 stores that sell kosher meat and 1 that sells non-kosher meat, if you find a piece of meat in the street near those stores, you would say that it came from the stores that sell kosher meat. It's kosher. So that's the concept of Rov in Isurim. And that everyone agrees with. The question that we're grappling with here is whether Rov applies in an instance where we're dealing with Mammon. And Rav says that it does apply. And Shmuel says it does not apply. And we're going to see today that we've brought up this entire topic because we're going to bring, actually the ultimate raya we're going to bring is going to be from our Mishnah. So we're still making our way through this sugya. So second line, Tashma, come in here, we'll try to establish whether B'mamon in cases monetary matters, Holchanach HaRov, we go after Rov. So what do we say? A case that we've encountered a number of times. Shar Shenaga Chesapara, V'nimtza Ubro Betzido. So we have a shar that we know that it gored a cow, and at the side of the cow we find an Uber. An Uber is a fetus, so an aborted calf. And the question is as follows. Any adua, it's not known, the way the Rashbam learns, is not known to Bezdin. Im ad shelo nagcha yolda, o imisha nagcha yolda. So the question is, we don't know whether, when this miscarriage, because the cow miscarried, the fetus here. And the question is, when did that happen? Did the cow happen to miscarry the fetus and then subsequently this shar came along and gored the cow? Or do we say that the shar goring the cow is what caused the cow to abort the fetus? And the difference would be whether we have to pay, and obviously we're going to have to pay for the para, for the cow, because the shar gored it. But the question is, does the owner of the shar also need to pay for the Uber? So the halacha is as follows: Meshalem chatzi nezak lepara, revia levlad. So the halacha is that you pay chatzi nezak, you pay half damages for the para, because we know we're dealing here with a shar tam, and a shar tam, a shar that has not, an ox that has not gored 3 times, only pays half damages. So for the cow, which for certain was gored by this shar, then you pay chatzi nezak. But the question we're dealing with is whether you have to pay for the Uber for the fetus that was aborted. And the halacha we say is a revia levlad. And for that, for the fetus, you pay a quarter. Why? Because, at most you would owe for the fetus would be half, just like the mother, right? So therefore, the argument, one side says you owe half, the other side says no, it was aborted before you ever started. So we're dealing with a case of mamon amuta basafik. We're dealing with, unknown circumstance. And the halacha follows sumchus, the mamon amuta basafik chokin, that when you have this form of doubt, you divide the money. And, that's how we come up, with the idea of paying a fourth for the vlad. Now the Gemara wants to know, via mai, Why, according to Rav, would this be true? If we hold Hochim Mamanach HaRov, that in the case of monetary matters we go after Rov, Lema, so why not say, Halach HaRov Paros, look at the world and you determine that there's a Rov in the case of cows, what's the Rov? A Rov Paros Misabros Vyodos. That you say that most pregnant cows, give birth to a calf. They don't abort. So therefore, Rov would tell you that in an ordinary court, or an ordinary case, a cow would not abort, and therefore v'havadai machmas negicha hepila. And therefore, you should say that Rov tells you that certainly what happened here is that the reason the cow aborted is because the shor gored the cow, and therefore we should use. If you're correct, Rav, that we use the concept of Rov in monetary matters, so use Rov here to say that it must be that the goring caused the fetus to abort, and therefore you should not pay Revia Nezek, but you should pay Chatzi Nezek. So that's a kasha on Rav. So the Gemara says, Hasam Mishum Demesafkalon. So the Gemara is going to say that according to the way Rav would answer is as follows. Rav would say, no, everyone could agree with my opinion. Then in cases of Rov, you go after, then in case of Mammon, you go after the Rov. But why in this case do we say it's a quarter as opposed to saying it's a half by following the Rov? Is because even once you say Rov, there's a question. This is how the Rashbam seems to learn. So it says, Hasa Mishum de Mesafgalon. That even after you apply Rov, there's a doubt. The Ikal Amemar, cause there's, you can say that Mekama Asa Umibiyususa Hepila. So he says as follows, that we have a doubt as follows. Even if you're going to say that you should follow Rov Paros, and that Rov Paros, most cows don't abort, and therefore it's the shor that caused the abortion here, that caused the fetus to abort, but you still have a problem because we don't know exactly how this shor caused the abortion. Because there's two possibilities. One is that the shor was charging at the cow, and the other is that the shor came from behind the cow and gored it. What's the difference? The Rashbam says whether the cow sees the shor coming. So if the shor is coming right at him, so what happens? Then it's quite possible that the reason the cow aborted the fetus is because the cow got scared. In other words, and then the Rashbam says, just like, you know, by a person, in other words, you can cause, it doesn't have to be the actual goring, it could be that just they got scared. So therefore, we don't know, did the shor come charging at the cow, in which case possibly what happened is the cow aborted the fetus out of fear, or did the shor come from behind and the cow never saw the shor coming, and therefore for sure the shor caused the animal to abort. What would be the difference? Because if it's basically by fear that it caused the animal to abort, they would not be chayev. Because as the Rashbam points out, v'kaimel an amavis chavero patum midine adam. He says someone who causes damage by fear, he's patur midine adam. He happens to be chayev midine shemayim, but he's patur midine adam. And the Rashbam says the kosha came behemto hamivaetes. He says, surely, if it's true in a case of a human who's always chayev, that we say that he's not chayev in that case, surely in the case of behema, it's only grama benizakin, it's only an indirect cause, and therefore he'd be pater. So what are we saying? So Rav is saying, everyone could agree with me that we go after Rov. And normally you would say that Rov, Paros, Misabros, Yodos, that they're gonna have their child, they're gonna have the calf, they're not gonna abort. But in this case, you're still left with a question, because even if it was the shor that caused the abortion, meaning that you're right, naturally there would not be an abortion, but even if it's the shor that caused it, we don't know whether the shor caused it in a grama manner by scaring the cow, or did the shor cause it in a direct manner. So that seems to be how the Rashbam learns, is that even if you follow Rov, there's still a suffix. Some of the Mepharshim, the way they explain it is that you end up here with two miyuts. And if you have two miyuts against the Rov, then the Rov doesn't rule. What are the two miyuts? So the first miyut is that maybe, even though most cows carry to full term, maybe this cow was from the miyut that didn't. And then you similarly have a question, even if this was a case that was caused by the shor, you could say that in some number of cases it's going to be the scare or the fright that causes it. And if you have two miyots against the rov doesn't apply. So therefore, Rav would answer us that rov definitely applies in some cases, but not in this case because of the particulars about it. Okay. Now, just in general, the Rashbam says, we'll say it quickly, but the Rashbam discusses here the question of, and he actually discussed it in more detail, yesterday's daf. I don't know if the Rav went into it, but the question is, we're dealing here with the halacha of sumchis. And so sumchis says that, mamana mutu basafik chokim. So the question that we're dealing with is that the overall question that we started with is this question of, if you have a behemoth that was sold and you don't know whether it was sold for plowing or for shechita, right? So why don't we say that in that case it's also a suffix, and mamana mutu basafik is chokim. So if we paskin like sumchis that when you have a suffix you divide it, why is the halacha Rav and Shmuel about yes and are 100% or zero? Why not say mamana mutu basafik chokin? And so the Rashbam distinguishes and says that there's a difference between essentially what he's saying is there's a difference between a doubt in law or a doubt in fact. So he's saying, what is a suffix that we say you split is when you're trying to figure out what are the circumstances of what happened here. So in other words, you have a question, how did this abortion come about? Did the animal gore before the paro aborted or after? So that's a fundamental suffix. And in that case, we're going to say, mamana mutu basafik chokin. In the case of our case, while we have a suffix, how to rule, because we're not sure, and it's a question in law. When someone buys an animal without specifying whether they had intended it for eating it or for plowing with it, so that's a suffix in law, and in a suffix in law, the halach of sumchis would not apply. Okay, so no, we thought we had a question on Rav, and we're saying no proof from there. The Gemara now says, lema ketanai, let's say that the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel is really like a machlokas tanayim. What would be the machlokas tanayim? Shar shaya roa. If you had a shar that was grazing, the significance of grazing would seem to be that that is together with other sharas, other oxen. V'nimsa shar harug betzido. So you have this shar that's grazing, and next to it you have a dead shar who's been gored. Afapi shazem menugach, even though this shor that's lying there dead next to this ox, vizem muad ligach, and this particular ox is a muad who has been demonstrated to be a goring ox, or zem menushach, you have this dead animal next to him who's been bitten, vizem muad lishach, and this animal is known to be a biting animal, right? Ein omrim biyadua shezen nalcho vezen nashcho. You don't assume, you don't say that we know for certain that this one gored or that this one bit. In other words, so what you have in this case is you have essentially karov. You have that this shar is right next to the dead animal, and this shar is a goring animal or a biting animal, and the shar that's dead has been gored or bitten. So you might think you should assume, based on the fact of proximity of karov, which is a chazaka, you might assume that chazaka should prove that it's this animal that killed the animal next to it. So the Tanakhama says, no, we don't say that, we don't assume that, and therefore, he's not chayev for the death of this animal, because you can't prove that it was him. Rabbi Acha says, gamal ha'ocher ben agmalim. So if you have a camel that was essentially mating, and the Rashbam talks about this word ocher, either is because camels mate back to back, or because the Rashbam doesn't like it as much, but he says maybe it's a lashon of nocher, which is the noises that they make. But in short, what we're dealing with is we're dealing with a camel that is in the act of mating.
And the way camels are when they mate is that they it seems they get violent and they lash out or they hit other males that are near it. So what do you have here? You have a camel that's in this mating mode, and now you find another dead camel next to it. So the presumption is that this camel caused the death of the other camel. So Rav Acha says, "Biyadua shezeh haragu." So we can assume for certain that it's this camel that caused the death of the camel that's next to it that's dead. So we're trying to find that this machlokas tanayim. So we're going to assume savrua. They thought or they assumed the ruba v'chazaka ki adadininu, that a rov and a chazaka are equivalent. In other words, because we've been dealing with rov, in this case it's a chazaka of karov, that that animal's right next to it, and there's an assumption that that it was this animal. So we are assuming that those are parallel, they're similar in many respects, a rov and a chazaka, and therefore, we could say that we have a machlokas tanaim. Lema rav da amar karav acha, that rav who says holchim amaman acha rov. So one second, let's just take a step back for a second first, because there's a little bit of a funny machlokas. In other words, we bring one case of one who's muad or who's known to bite or to gore, and then Rav Acha responds talking about a different case altogether, which is a case of camels going. And so the Rashbam says that the Chiddush, the reason that Rav Acha says his halacha in a different case is because he says that he's saying that even in a case. Rav Acha is bringing a bigger chiddush, because in other words, he's saying, even in a case where we don't know anything about the propensity of this camel to kill, we're going to assume that this camel caused the death, which is a bigger chiddush even than saying that if you have a mu'ah that it caused it. But in any event, essentially, we have a machlokas between the Tanakama and Rav Acha, and so what we're going to say is, lema rav damak rav acha, that rav who says, holchim b'mamon acha arov, would also say in Chazaka we follow that we go in the cases of monetary issues we go after Chazaka, and therefore we're going to assume that this camel killed the other one because we look at Chazaka. Shmuel Amar Ketanakama, and we're going to say that Shmuel holds like the Tanakama, because you see the Tanakama says we don't follow Chazaka, we don't assume that just because this animal is a goring animal and there's a gored animal next to it that he caused it. So it seems that this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel about whether holchim b'mamon acha rov, if you assume that rov and chazaka are equivalent, seems to be a machlokas tanayim. So the Gemara answers that no, there's no proof that this is a machlokas tanayim. Amar lecha Rav. Rav would tell you, I who say that holchim b'mamon acha rov, I who say holchim b'mamon acha rov, afilu l'tanakama. Even the Tanakama, who in this case talks about the gored shar and says that he's putter, would agree with me in a case of rov, because ad kan lo kamer Tanakama hasam ela delo azlinon basar chazaka ava basar ruba azlinon. So in other words, again, remember the question here was premised, the question that we're trying to say machlokes tanaim was premised on the fact that rov and chazaka are equivalent. And Rav is going to say, actually Shmuel is going to say the same thing, but he's going to say that Rov and Chazaka are not equivalent. That Rav is saying that Rov is more powerful than Chazaka. So therefore, bringing me a case of Chazaka and saying we see we don't apply Chazaka in a case of monetary damages is no proof about Rov, because Rov is better. The Rashbam doesn't really explain why it's better, but some point to the fact that we know that we have a rule that rov v'karov holchim acha rov. So when you have competing claims of rov or chazaka, that we follow rov. So therefore, if you see that when they're competing, rov is stronger, so then that will seem to indicate that rov is a stronger tool. And so Rav is saying, don't ask questions on my view that says we go after rov in monetary matters. Don't ask me a question from Chazaka, because Chazaka is a weaker proof than a rov, and maybe even the Tanakama, who says we don't follow Chazaka, would agree with me that we would follow rov. So that's why Rav would answer to you, no, everyone goes in accordance with me. For sure, the Rav Acha, who holds of Chazaka, that we apply Chazaka, would agree with me that you apply rov, because a rov is stronger. And even the Tanakama, who doesn't apply chazaka, might still apply rov, like my opinion. Shmuel Amar Lecha, and Shmuel would say to you, I also think that everyone could go like me, and there's no proof that there's a machlokas tanaim. Anada Amri Afilu Ravacha. That my view that you don't follow, that you don't go in rove, that you don't go in monetary matters after a rove, is that even Rav Acha could agree with me. Rav Acha, who said for sure the camel who was mating killed this camel because of chazaka. Ad kan lo kama Rav Acha hasam. Rav Acha only said that elo da azlinam basar chazaka. That he said it in a case of chazaka. The hu gufa muchzok. That it itself is muchzak. I'll explain what that means in a moment. But maybe even Rav Acha would agree to me that while we do apply chazaka, and Rav Acha assumes that this camel killed the camel next to it, but he would not necessarily apply rov. So what is Shmuel's point here? He's saying as follows, that when you're dealing with a chazaka, like karov. Karov means that the animal is right next to it, right? And you know that this animal was mating, and animals that are mating are violent, and the animal is now dead next to it. So there is something to say that this particular camel caused this particular death, because they're next to each other, right? So therefore, the chazaka is saying that it is likely this very camel that did it. Whereas in a case of rov, what you're saying is, generally speaking, in the world, this is how things work. So therefore, we might assume that it's how it worked in this case. But rov doesn't say anything about this particular camel being a killing camel. It just said camels, when they're in this mode, therefore, a rov is generally, the way the Rashbam puts it is a ruba de lesa kamon. It's not in front of us, meaning it's nothing that's tied to the particular actors in this case. We're looking at what goes on in the world at large. In the case of chazaka, where they're next to each other, chazaka, it's speaking specifically to this very camel, saying this very camel is likely to have caused it. Why? Because we can explain the circumstances, and it's right next to it. So it has a chazaka going along with it. So therefore, we try to say it's a machlokas tanayim, and both Rav and Shmuel would say, no, I can tell you that both tanayim would agree with my view in whether, in Hilchos Mammon, whether we're holach achar rov or not. Tashma, come in here. Now, the Rashbam points out an interesting structural thing. Normally, you have tashmas, and you try and bring proofs one way or another to a view, and then at the end, you'll sometimes say, lema ketanai. Let's say it's like a machlokas tanai. So now we're going back to a tashma. So the Rashbam seems to say the reason for that is because we're going to see this tashma will actually be the question that proves our issue, or at least partially, and it's going to result in there being a machlokas tanaim. So before we get to our final result that actually deals with the machlokas tanaim, they try to deal with the first argument that it's machlokas tanaim stuck in the middle, and now we come back to a tashma to try and prove the point. So we're four lines up from the bottom. Tashma. Hamocher peros chavero. So this is our Mishnah. We're going to bring in again. That's the whole reason we brought this discussion here, is because we're going to demonstrate halacha and the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel on the basis of our Mishnah. Tashma, we learned in our Mishnah. Hamocher peros chavero. Someone sold fruits to his friend vizaran, and he planted them velot samchu, and they didn't sprout. V'afilu zera pishtan. Even if the seeds that he sold him were flax seeds. You're not chayev in the achrayas. So now, the Gemara wants to figure out, what does this mean when we say even flax seeds? In other words, you just said a halacha by seeds, and now you're saying even flax seeds, which implies that the halacha is more novel in the case of flax seeds. So what is it saying, even flax seeds? So my afilu lav afilu zera pishtan the ruba lezriya zavni afilu hachi la azlina basa ruba. So doesn't this prove from our Mishnah, and in fact the Gemara is going to say it does, that you see when it says even flax seeds, it's because why would I think flax seeds are different? Because most people who buy flax seeds are buying it for planting, because generally speaking, people don't use flax seeds for that many, that many other uses. And so the majority of people far and away who buy flax seeds are buying it for, planting. So what do you have? You have a rove. And yet the rove does not demonstrate to you, and yet the halacha is that the sale is not returned, because we don't assume that he's part of the rove. Because if the rove tells you for certain that this person bought it for Zriya, then you would say, well, if he bought it for Zriya, at the end of the day, it didn't take, and therefore he should get his money back. And yet we say it doesn't work like that. So therefore, you see that in Hilchos Mammon, in monetary matters, you don't go after rove. So this is, in fact, from our Mishnah, a good kasha on Rav, who says we do go basarov, because we see that you don't go basarov. So the Gemara is going to answer Tanoihi, that you're right. Our Mishnah, in fact, is a proof to Shmuel, and it is a kasha on Rav. But Rav would be able to tell you, I hold like a different Tana. Where's the Tana that we see Rav would hold like? Tanoihi, it's machlokas Tanoim. The Sanya, because we learned in a brisa, second to bottom line, Hamocher peres lechavero. Someone sold fruits to his friend, Vizaran, and he planted them, Vlot Samchu, and they didn't sprout, they didn't take hold. Zarone Gina. So if you have seeds of a garden, She'ener Nechalon, that under no circumstance would someone eat these seeds raw. So Chayev Biachriuson, because then you're Chayev Bachrayas. So okay, so why is that? Because if the person bought seeds that the only use for them is planting, and he planted them and they were defective, he gets to come back and say, sorry, those were defective seeds. There's no question that they were sold for planting. So in that case, he's Chayev. Zera Pishtan, but if he brings, if he sells flax seeds, which in most cases are sold for planting, but not in all cases, some people use flax seeds for other things. So ain't a chayv b'achrusin. So then he's not chayv in achrayas. Who is this like? So far, this is exactly like our Mishnah. Our Mishnah has three cases. You're saying regular seeds, we don't assume that they're sold for planting. Flax seeds, which are generally sold for planting, we don't either assume that it was sold for planting because maybe he was buying it for some other purpose. Seeds that have no purpose other than planting, those the sale returns because there's no other explanation of why it was sold and they were in fact defective for planting. So far, this is the Tanakama of the Braisa, holds exactly like our Mishnah, which would be like the Halacha of Shmuel. The Braisa continues, Rabbi Yossi says, Nosin lo demei zera, that you give the value of the seeds. Why? This is going on the Pishtan seeds, because most flax seeds are sold for planting, not for eating, and therefore we assume that when this person bought flax seeds, even though theoretically he might have bought it in order to eat it, we don't assume that, and rather we assume he bought it for planting, and therefore you return it. So what are we saying in this halacha according to Rabbi Yossi? We're saying holchim mamon acharov, because this is a monetary transaction, and you say most people buy flax seeds to plant, therefore he must have bought it to plant. If he bought it to plant and they didn't work, he should get a refund of his money. So this is the answer of where, in other words, how we ask the kasha, because our mission goes like Shmuel, we say you're right. Our mission argues on Rav, but Rav has a different Tana, which Tana Rabbi Yossi. But the Braisa continues, Amrulo, they said to him, now in this case, this is, Amrulo is a new opinion. This is not the Tanakama saying back to Rabbi Yossi. Amrulo, so they said to him, Harbe lochin osu l'dvar macherim. Lots of people buy seeds for other reasons, and therefore, the way the Amrulo is saying is, I agree with, we're going to see this in the Gemara, but I agree with you that we would go in monetary matters, we would follow Rove, but the reason in this particular case that we don't is because I'm going to argue with you about how we would apply the halacha of Rove. What's the difference between them? The argument is as follows. So we've been discussing the fact that flax seeds, the Rove says that they were bought for planting. Why? Because you look at the universe of flax seeds that were sold. Let's say there were 1 million flax seeds sold. We're going to say 950,000 of them went for planting. So that's a case of rove that says, chances are when this person bought flax seeds, it was for planting. So that's the rove we've been talking about. The Amrulo has a different rove. They say as follows, most people that buy flax seeds buy it for themselves. Why? Because the majority of people aren't farmers. right? So if you look at all the wheat kernels that get sold, so we know, like, especially in times of Gemara, they used to sometimes bake the wheat kernels and it was like a candy, right? So maybe more people who buy wheat kernels buy it for eating, but that's just because, in other words, when I buy wheat kernels to eat, I buy 50 kernels. When the guy's buying it to farm, he buys 1,000 kernels, right? So the point just is, do you look at the majority of seeds, in which case you say it's for planting, or do you look at the majority of purchases and purchasers and say most people who buy seeds, who buy flax seeds, are buying it for eating, where the Rashbam says either for eating or for refuah, for healing properties. So what we have is that Tanakamu says, like Shmuel, that says we don't go after Rove in monetary matters, and therefore we do not return the sale of seeds, even flax seeds, and even though the majority of people who buy flax seeds are for planting, because we don't go after Rove. Rav Yossi, who holds like Rav, or Rav who holds like Rav Yossi, says that no, we do return the sale because Holchim Mamonachar Rov, and Rov seeds are sold for planting. The Amrulo says, I agree with you that you say Rov, but I think Rov, in the case of flax seeds, would tell you that that it is bought for eating or for refuah, and therefore the sale would not return. So now the Gemara is just—I've mostly explained to you outside what we're about to say inside. Man Tanoi, which is the Machlokas Tanoim? Ilema Rabbi Yossi va'amru lo. If you're going to say that the honors, we said there's a Machlokas Tanoim. So is the Machlokas Tanoim between Rabbi Yossi and the Amru lo between the second and third opinion? That doesn't make sense because Tavayu Basaruba Azli. Because both the Rabbi Yossi and the Amru lo agree that we follow Rov. But Mar Azal Basaruba de Inchi. One of them, which is the Amrulo, goes after Rove people that buy seeds are buying it for medicinal or eating purposes. Umar Rabbi Yossi Azo Basaruba de Zriya. He goes after the majority of flax seeds are planted, and therefore we assume that they were purchased for planting. So Ella, if you're going to tell me that there's a Machalkas Tanayim, E Tanakama Rabbi Yossi, E Tanakama for Amurlo. Either it's Rabbi Yossi, it's the Tanakama, and he's arguing either with Rabbi Yossi or with the Amurlo, because again, both Rabbi Yossi and the Amurlo say that we follow Rov. They differ in the outcome of the halacha as to what you say, because it depends which Rov you follow, but they both agree that you follow a Rov, whereas the Tanakama holds like Shmuel that we don't go after Rov in Hilchos Mammon. So now we have finished this sugya of Holchim Mammon Achar Rov. Our Mishnah supports the view of Shmuel and the Tanakama of the Braisa, but Rav is able to find support in the version of either Rabbi Yossi or the Amru Lo, and that's the conclusion of that sugya. Tana Rabbanan, Mahu Nosein Lo. So what happened? We're discussing these cases where someone bought seeds, and the seeds were defective, and we say he gives it back to him, right? So the question is, when he has to pay him back for having sold him defective seeds, mahu nosein lo, what exactly is he giving him? So the Tanakama says, demei zera v'lo hotza. What you're returning to him is the actual seeds, but you don't return to him all of his expenses. Because what happened? I bought seeds from you. I then took the seeds. I paid workers to plow. I paid workers to put the seeds in. We watered them. We fertilized. And then nothing happened. So I come back to you and say, pay me for everything. The Tanakama says, no, you got your money back for your seeds, but you can't come and claim other forms of damages from him. V'yesh omrim, the second view says, afotza, that you can even charge for all of the expenses. The way the Rashbam understands this, and most Rishonim seem to follow that, is that this is a kenas. And it's basically saying, so that people don't sell bum seeds, they actually let him do it. But al pi halacha, you wouldn't. Others, the Rashba in particular, related to the machlokas of Grama and Garmi, which we'll actually see tomorrow in Mir Tzashem. But in any event, the Rashbam learns that it's knas, that you would even have to pay all of his expenses. So now the Gemara is going to try and figure out from here to the Mishnah, man yesh omrim, who is this yesh omrim who say that you have to pay also the seeds? Omrim chista, Rav Shimon Gamlielhi. It's Rav Shimon Gamlielhi. So the Gemara says, okay, thanks for telling me it's Rav Shimon Gamlielhi. How do you know it's Rav Shimon Gamliel? Which case do we see Rav Shimon Gamliel says that? Hey, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which Rabbi Shimon Gamliel case tells you that? Elemo Rabbi Shimon Gamliel de Masnisin. Maybe you'll tell me it's Rav Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah. Because the Snan, because we learned in our Mishnah, Hamocher Peres Lechavero, someone who sold fruits to his friend. v'zaran, and he planted them. V'lot samchu, and they didn't sprout. V'afilu zarapishtan, even zarapishtan, eino chayiv v'achriyuson, n'na chayiv in achrayas, right? So that was the beginning, that was our Mishnah. Eima seifa, and then the seifa says, we skip what's in the parentheses there, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, zarone gina, she'eno nechol, and chayiv v'achriyuson. If you're planting seeds of a garden that are used for nothing, other than planting, then you have to return the money. So what do we see? Rav Shimon Gamliel comes to argue on the Tanakama, right? But the Gemara says Tanakama nami hachi kamer. Basically Rav Shimon Gamliel's halacha that seeds that are for no purpose other than planting that you have to return them. The Tanakama agrees with that too, because the implication is Zera Pishtan Hudeina Chai Bachriuson. Because the Tanakama said that in a case of flax seeds, even though Rove says that it was for planting, we don't assume that. But if it would be absolute and no one buys it for anything but planting, the Tanakama would agree. Hazaroni Gineshen Chalon Chai Bachriuson. So, but the Tanakama, the implication of the Tanakama, and frankly the implication of Rishim Gamliel, seems to be the same as the Tanakama, because remember, we discussed before, the Tanakama holds three cases. If you have things that could just as easily be eaten or planted, the halacha is that you don't return the sale. If you have things like flax seeds that even though generally speaking they're purchased for planting, it still doesn't prove it because we don't go after rove in mammon. And then the third thing is if they have no purpose other than planting, everyone would agree, you have to pay back. So basically, Rav Shimon Gamliel, the first case is obvious, according to those who don't hold of rove. So the second case was the Tanakama letting you know even flax seeds that most people use for planting, we don't assume it's only for planting. So that's what the Tanakama is telling you. And Rav Shimon Gamliel is coming to tell you the third case, that if it's used for no purpose other than planting, then you refund the money. So what kind of argument is going on here? El alav hotza ike benayu. So it must be that, the Rashbam talks about in particular, in other words, we have no choice. There's nothing in our Mishnah that tells us they're arguing about whether you have to pay all of the expenses or just refund the money. But since clearly they're arguing about something, at least that's what we think at the moment, clearly they're arguing about something. We don't know what they're arguing about. It must be they're arguing about this question about whether you have to pay, because otherwise, whether you have to pay the expenses, because otherwise it seems that Tanakam and Rishim Gamliel are saying the same thing. Mar Savar, one of them holds the Mezera. Umar Savar Afotza. So one of them, which would be the Tanakama, holds you just return the Demezera. And one of them holds that even you pay the Hotza. So then who would be the one who holds you even pay the Hotza? It would be Rav Shimon Gamliel. So therefore, that's how we know Rav Shimon Gamliel is the one who says that you have to pay back not just the seeds, but all the expenses that you incurred. So the Gemara says, Mimai, how do you know that that's, in other words, all you've done is shown me that Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Tanakama argue. How do you know that Rav Shimon Gamliel is the one who says that you should pay back not just the seeds, but the expenses also? Maybe it's the Tanakama. In other words, because you just picked the machlokas and you're randomly assigning views to them. So how can you tell me that that's the proof that it's Rav Shimon Gamliel? Dilma Ifcha. So the Gemara says, halokasha. That's no kasha. And it's interesting. The Rashbam says, because we see these words all the time, halokasha. Rashbam says that what that means, halokasha, means that's not a question for this reason, but I'll give you a better question. That's the structure that Rashbam explains. So, halokasha, that's no kasha, because kol tana basroi l'tapuyim milsa ka'asi. So he's saying, no, because generally speaking, the structure of Mishnayos, if you say something, and then another tana comes to say something else, the one who's coming second is coming to add something. So therefore, if one of them holds you pay back the seeds only, and the other holds that you pay back the seeds plus the expenses, then obviously the one who adds expenses would be the second view. And so if there's one who, and who's the second view, is Rav Shimon Gamliel. So that would be a good proof as to which, if you're saying that they're arguing about Hotza, about the added expenses of plowing and etc., it would in fact be Rav Shimon Gamliel. But I'll ask you a better question. V'dilma kula Rav Shimon Gamliel hi. Maybe the whole Mishnah is Rav Shimon Gamliel. We assume that Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Tanakama were arguing on each other. And we said, well, what are they arguing about? They seem to be saying the same thing. So therefore, it makes more sense in a certain sense to say that the whole Mishnah is Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Chasurei Mechzer of Ahachik Tani. And it's a Chasurei Mechzer. It's missing some words, but basically this is the structure. And the Rashbam explains it's better all the time we have Chasurei Mechzer, where Mishnah doesn't fully explicate everything. We have that all the time. And so that's not a problem. But to come up with the idea that the Tanakhama and Rishim Gamliel are arguing about whether you pay all of the expenses like plowing, there's nothing in the Mishnah that seems to lead us to think that. So he'd rather say Chesuri Mechsura than say that they're arguing about something that there's nothing in the Mishnah that implies that that's their argument. So what's the Chesuri Mechsura? This is how you would learn the Mishnah. Hamocher Peretz L'Chaveiro, someone who sold fruits to their friend. V'zaron, and he planted them, v'lo tzamchu, and they didn't take. So in that case, then we say we don't go acharov, and you don't return the money. Afilu zera pishtan, even flax seeds that rove of them, the majority of them are for planting, still ain't a chayav b'achriyusim, because maybe he bought it for medicinal purposes or for eating. Divrei Rabbi Rishon ben Gamliel, remember we said we had halacha 1, 2, and 3. So far we've done 1 and 2. So we say these are the words of Rabbi Rishon ben Gamliel. How do I share Rabbi Rishon ben Gamliel? Because we know that Rabbi Rishon ben Gamliel says, that if you have garden seeds that you're not chayav that are not eaten chayav bachrius, in that case you have to refund the money. So that's case number three. So in other words, now the structure is everything's Rav Shimon Gamliel, because we were saying everyone agreed. So therefore, case number one and two we say is Rav Shimon Gamliel, because we know that Rav Shimon Gamliel says only in the case where the sole use of these seeds is planting do we say that you have to refund the money. But if it's a case, a regular case of seeds, or even a case of flax seeds, there's no proof. All right? So therefore, there's no proof that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Tanakhama are arguing about Hotzah, about the cost of plowing and labor and etc. So therefore, Rav Chisda had told us that it's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel who holds that you have to pay back all the expenses. Where does he know it from? So we have to say a different halacha of Rav Shimon Gamliel that would show it. Elaha Rav Shimon Gamliel. It's the following case of Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Sanya, because we learned in a brisa. Hamolachitin litchon, that if someone brings wheat to someone who's going to grind the wheat, brings wheat for it to be ground, v'lo lasasun. And so how did they used to grind wheat? The way it would work is as follows. You would take the kernels of wheat, and you would soak them in water. What would happen? Then when you soak it in water, the husk would come off of the kernel. You would get rid of the husk, and you grind the flour, you grind the kernel, and you get good flour, right? If you were to grind up the kernels when it has the husk on it, you're going to get bad flour. Basically, you're going to get what we call here morsun or subin, which is bran. So what happened? The below lost his son. The guy didn't... he didn't first make it wet to make the husks come off. The asan subin on morsin, and he made it subin. So the Rashbam says subin is the you grind up the whole seed with the husk. It's bad. It's bran. On morsin is the actual outside of the kernel. So what happened here? You gave a guy your wheat, and he messed up your wheat because instead of getting rid of the husks and making you flour, he made you bran. Or kemach l'nachdom v'fo pasni pulin, that you brought flour to a baker to bake you bread, and instead he made you bread that couldn't stick together. It's nipulin, it falls, the crumbs fall off. The Rashbam says that it just crumbles up. Behema l'tabach v'nibla, or you brought a behema to a shochet, and he caused it, he didn't shecht it properly, and he made it into nevela. So in all these cases, you brought something to someone. Now, we're talking about where you brought it to a professional. Chayev. In that case, he's chayev. Mipnei shehu kenosei sachar. Cause he's like a paid person, like a shomer sachar, or a paid person. Now, the Gemara, both Rashbam and Tosas talk about this, that the Gemara in Baba Kama doesn't say he's like a paid person, he is a paid person. If he was not paid, and he was an expert, then he'd be potter. Why? The Tosas here is a famous Tosas, but Tosas discusses the fact that it's almost like an onus. It's geneva karv la onus. I guess the idea is he's a real expert, so we shouldn't assume that he's going to mess up. If he messed up, it's an onus. It's not just a regular mistake. But in any event, in this case, we're saying you brought him this stuff to do, and he messed it up. Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar says, not only, let's say you brought this guy bread or an animal, you were planning to serve it at a big meal, right? Not only do you have to pay him back for the flour you messed up, you have to pay him for his embarrassment, because what's going to happen is guests are going to show up and he has crumbly bread that they can't eat. And the guests are going to be embarrassed. Yeah, I'm not sure why. I guess some say the guests are embarrassed if there's nothing to eat. Maybe they feel bad that they're sitting at a suda that their host you know, has no food for them. So people feel bad. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says that you have to pay not only for the flour that was lost, but you have to pay for the embarrassment of the host and his guests. So therefore, if you have to pay for the embarrassment of the host and the guests, which is not even a tangible damage, surely he would agree that if you sold the guy bad seeds and he paid employees to plow and to water and to fertilize, that for sure you'd have to pay him for that. So that, in fact, is the source for Rav Chisda's halacha, that who is it that holds you have to pay all the costs of plowing and etc. would be Rav Shimon Gamliel, because we see it from this case. V'chein hayu Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon Gamliel used to say, in along a similar lines, minhag gadol hayu b'Yerushalayim, there was a great minhag in Yerushalayim, hamoser sudu l'chavero, if someone gave food to someone to cook for him or asked him to cook a meal for him, the kilkala, and he ended up with a bad meal, he messed it up. Nosumo dmei boshto, dmei boshes archav. They asked to pay the guy for his embarrassment and for the embarrassment of his guests. Od minag gadol hayu b'Yerushalayim. There's also another great minag in Yerushalayim. Mapa prusa agabe pesach. That people used to have a cloth hanging outside their door. Any time that the cloth was spread out there, that people knew, okay, guests can still come because there's plenty of food. Nistalko hamapa, when they removed the mapa, ain't no orchid nechnasin. And then guests wouldn't come because they're out of food. It's interesting. The Yerushalmi in Brachas talks about this, that someone shouldn't come late to a bris or to some other kind of simcha. It says you shouldn't do that because they're worried, and they say you shouldn't come after the third thing has been served, because they're worried that if you're going to come late, maybe they're going to be out of food already, and then the host is going to feel bad. So they say that this Gemara, that this minhag in Yerushalayim was coming to address this matter. So rather than say don't come by this course or whatever, they could put out a cloth, and when they pull in the cloth, people come and say, "Oh, I see, I'm coming too late to the wedding because there's no food left." So they just leave and they don't go in. Okay.